Where are the Bunga people? We paid them to come here. And now you have this fellow's head, you allow so and so. And he went on and on. He was mad, you know. We paid them to so and so and so. And today you allow your rights to be taken by these people here. Your rights, if you please, you see. Meanwhile, we have our own rights, and the people have understood their rights. So it was so good. I've never forgotten that. Mother said, marched out, you know, angry. He could do nothing about it.
We were the Bunga people.
The Bunga people couldn't do anything about it. They had to, with their tails between their heads, they walk away.
Mm-hmm. The people had taken over.
Yeah, the people had taken over. With tails between their legs, they had to go away. Yeah, and everybody was happy.
The magistrate didn't know what to do.
And I saw the thing at work, you know. Mm. That was beautiful. Mm. And then, you know, it's so simply done.
The people in front, the 12 people, without any complex, they ask the question. And they dismiss. And the next one. And you can imagine what it is in that hidebound little community.
Yeah.
And people are courageous there.
You don't remember the date?
No, the dates I never remember.
Yeah, it was...
After the war.
Yes, it was after the war.
Yeah.
What, 49?
Those 50, were the day, yeah, 47, 48, maturity, right?
Yeah. Can I just ask something else on the rehabilitation schemes? I mean, how effective was it? I mean, was it effective at all? Or did the resistance just...
How effective was it? But well, this is really a continuation of the same thing. We bring them together. Mm. And the rehabilitation scheme, oh yes, now. That leads to the formation of the big organization. I have to answer it.
Now you come to that area where you come to the big peasant organizations, the basis of.
Now there are no organizations there. But we introduce now this question of the culling of the stock. Now the government had a stupid idea also. You know, they get people to go and steal cattle, kill them, and nobody's ever arrested. And so we are told the chaps, now look, what we have to do, we have to form, what do we call them now? You know, like the people who have to guard.
Oh, yes.
Vigilance committees.
Vigilance. That's right. They had to form.
Vigilance.
Yeah, a few people.
Vigilance committees.
12 or so, you see, in an area. So that they guard over to protect your cattle. And they did that. And side by side with all these things, were careful to introduce the democratic ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, how these things work, and so on. And the peasants, and I didn't know they'd taken it in until, you know, I saw the results. So, all over they have these committees, all over. And then, before you knew, the committees grew into organizations. Now everybody now joined your organization. Then you have an organizations of thousands and thousands of people in an area coming from those little committees. And they use democratic methods that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Now, we never went out to form these organizations. But they drew from what we were saying. Well, the logical thing is this. and they did it. And by the 60s, the organizations in the Transkei and all those places there were far bigger than, if you took Congress, you took Abdusa, and you took, what was the third one?
The Unity Movement.
The PAC. If you took all three of them, numerically, they did not come up to one of the biggest peasant organizations. So big were the organizations. And they built them themselves. And you know, the people had a hard time. That's why they could build. So, for instance, now, when the magistrate decides that the people are unruly, they call the police, who surround the village.
And attack them.
Yeah. And they call not the police, the army, surround the village, and nobody can go in or out. Even if you belong there, at that time you can't come in. If you are out at the time when they saw they're surrounded. And then they shoot the people. And the people run and they are shot all over. And the leaders remained up in the forest, in hiding. Now, people who live that kind of life, you can understand, once they pick up a thing, they're serious about it. Because to them it's life and death.
Yes. And you know the old story about when the people rise in a revolt, they set all the crops on fire. Mm. And then cattle run, and then the cattle are burned to death, and the crops on fire, and starvation. That's the usual imperialist way. And that has been carried through up till today. Mm. Setting the crops on fire and starving the people.
Now you Saracens.
They don't call them Saracens, they call them Saracens.
But we remember the Saracens. Yeah, Saracens.
In the early
60s. Yeah. Yeah. After shooting the people, they take their Saracens and run over the crops. Mm. Smash the crops, you Saracens. Why? To force the people to go and work. No. And the people had shown that they're not going to go and work. In the mines in Natal, the sugar plantations in Natal, they wouldn't go. So this is what they do to force them.
Do you remember the names of others in the Transkei who activists with you? People like Tsotsi, or were there others?
Well, Tsotsi was a lawyer. They would come to him as a lawyer. Mm-hmm.
Cases.
Yeah.
Various cases of persecution.
That's right. That was his field. Mm-hmm.
That's how we come to know about this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you can't
from amongst the people, were there any sort of leading individuals who?
But
amongst the peasants.
Yes. But you've also got to understand that he's staying there with the magistrate there, staying also there. You know what I mean? And people come to him. He has to tell them things, but he's essentially their lawyer.
Now, apart from Tsotsi, were there any outstanding peasants that you can remember?
Peasants.
Names of peasants.
Can't remember names. You can't rely on my memory.
There were chiefs. What
can't.
About Joy? What yeah. About someone?
Oh yes, that I can't. Ganga, Novugela. Those were real good.
Can you tell us a bit about some of these people?
No, Novugela. What about them?
Now, can you just mention some of them? Can tell us a bit where they lived or...
Oh, you had...
Do you have any memories of...
Gukela was... what the bloody hell?
I think it was at Mount A lived here.
Mount A
lived. Gukela lived at Mount A.
And...
he was a very powerful fellow. He was a six-footer, big fellow. And he had a strange complexion. It was a red complexion. But a brick red, you know, not the red of an Afrikaner who burnt by the... but it was a peculiar red face. And it wasn't black. It was like red clay, you know, something like that. This complexion was, it was a very strange complexion. But, and a booming voice, a big personality in every sense.
And these are the fellows who had influence on the chiefs.
Oh yes, yeah. Very powerful fellows.
They had to surround the chiefs and see that the chiefs don't do this or that, the other. Mm-hmm. You see.
Uh-huh.
Now that was by part of their duty.
Mm-hmm. Advising.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any more questions in the room?
Lots, but perhaps we should.
Then later came Tob. You know Tob?
Yeah, Tob's guy.
Yeah.
Tob and the Tob's guy.
Now, by this time, our chaps were in control. Mm-hmm. And there was Mbeki, who was in Aidutua.
Mm-hmm.
But he was Congress. But now he was out of place there because there was no Congress there.
Is this Govan, Terry?
Huh?
Govan.
Was this Govan?
Govan. Yeah, Govan. So now they had this TOB. And the chaps were very mischievous. And deliberately elected Mbeki a secretary to get him away from this whole business, you see. Now the Tiobi is convention.
Yeah.
And there he was embarrassed.
Yeah, Mbeki was quite embarrassed.
Yeah.
Because this organization was controlled by our fellows.
Yeah. So
all our fellows there, and Leo was very powerful in there, Novokera, all of them, very powerful. They were running the organization. There was Tranka there too.
And so they then also Mbeki.
They put Mbeki there of all things.
And the CP insists that he must stand for elections in the Bunga.
Mm-hmm.
To the Bunga election.
Yes, you're a Bunga, you please.
Yeah. Then we
and he does. Oh, that was the last time. That was the last thing to do. He just, people who had nothing to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he left the trans guy. To P.E.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And P.E. was at a stronghold there.
Mm-hmm.
In a branch there. He went and stayed there. He left his wife with a shop in the Transkei. To this day, the wife is still there.
He disgraced himself by standing for the Bunga, and the whole nation was boycotting the Bunga, you know.
Yeah.
He was stupid.
You know, there's a book, I suppose you must have seen it.
The Revolt of the...
By Mbeki.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I
read this book.
The peasant struggle.
I was so, you know, I felt...
Ruth first, I think.
No, wait a minute. I felt...
Nauseous?
Nauseous. I said, can a man be so, you know, so dirty? Can a man so lie so much, so blatantly? Then I read later on, no, Back he was collecting material to write a book. And Ruth first took that and wrote the book when Becky was in jail. You know, in this book, the top is there, and all the work of the convention is there, and obviously the convention is controlling the situation, but not a word about it. I said, could a man be so dishonest? Then I let know it wasn't Becky. You know, I was relieved when I had that. Mm-hmm. Now, Ruth first took the manuscript, what he was, his notes, and wrote. Mm-hmm. And put the name of Becky on the book.
Yeah. He used Becky's name.
Shall we call it?
Not for the first time that sort of thing has been done.
Yeah.
Yes, well.
Was there anything today else?
Yeah, no, I think we can call it the day now. It's extremely interesting. But I'm sure you're getting tired, and we'll come back and follow up.
From an old man. And this old man has got a quotation. He's a literate old man. And how can man die better than facing fearful odds? For the ashes of his fathers and the temples of his gods. He reads this letter. It comes from an old teacher, schoolmaster, who sits in the audience and gives it to him.
No, this is what had happened.
And sends it to him.
No, I was then. Down sky, and he says, then I was arrested. Then they collected the money.
Yes.
Then I was released. So I went home, and then the fellow, father-in-law of mine, so to see my mother, so I said, Ma, what about a holiday? Then so we went for where to? Let's go down to Natal. So we went, but we had to go through the Transkei. Now there's an old fellow there who's a relative, who's well known. And we get there, we put up there. And so while he's talking, you know, they're talking, these people. And by the way, I can never... tell the story without telling this one thing. This old fellow, the relationship of the old, the respect they had for one another. This old chap didn't know what to do with my mother. He goes and takes it, a chair, puts it there for her, looks for something else to, you know. And my mother sits there like a queen, as if she expected, this is due to her, so to, to speak, you know.
Yeah.
And I could never forget that, you know, the respect the old people had for one another. That went home with me. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about was something else. Now I...
When you addressed a meeting.
I had addressed a meeting. No, this is now... By this time I'd been arrested, you see.
Mm.
It was the same trip. I had addressed a meeting further down.
Mm.
And then when I was right up there, I was arrested.
Mm.
And then, bail. Then we were going to Natal and I came through the Transkei. And people heard I was there. This old man I had that was there, he came, and people kept coming. This old man says, do you remember what questions I asked you? I say, no, I don't. So he says, you remember I asked you this, that, and that, and that, and you answered. Your answer was, when a man goes to war, he expects two things, to come back or not to come back. He said, when you said that, my boy, I realize now that that's a man who knows what he's doing.
What about that other story about the man who couldn't read, but his child could translate a leaflet?
Oh, yeah.
And he said, I know where this leaflet comes from. It comes from those people in Cape Town.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I addressed, you see, a meeting in the veld. Mm-hmm. When I finished, an old fellow gets up. He says, you keep on talking about kovesh, kovesh, kovesh. We are illiterate. We don't understand this kovesh business here. You must do like those people in Cape Town who send us a book. You know, by a book they mean
a broadsheet,
you see. And then you send us a book. You must do like them. I didn't have the heart to say. So I look at him. Now he pretends to be quite angry about this business and my failure. So I look at him. I see the old chap is very pleased. So I look. Then something strikes him. There's a contradiction here. He had said, we are illiterate. And you talk about convention, meaning convention. When you are illiterate. And then, he says, I must send a book. He recognizes the... I look at him and I smile. He says, no. I mean, you see, I've got a daughter that big. And my daughter reads to me carefully. And then I help her when she gets stuck reading the language, you see. Yeah. Yeah. So I was so pleased, but I didn't have the heart to tell him. But one thing that was clear was they understood my language. This language is the language of those people, you know, who send us, you see, yes, these things.
Yeah. They know
they know
our political language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like during the war, we sent out a long letter under a pseudonym. It went right through. And I tell you, the people knew exactly where it came from. We put a name that was never heard of, Gushumnai. They knew exactly where it came from, no question. Because they know the language.
They didn't know who sent it. There was no name. They didn't know where it came from. They understood the language and
they knew.
Yeah. That's how illegality was created.
Yeah.
And that's a thing you can't publish.
Yeah.
That is when an organization has to act illegally. Like now.
Mm.
Mm. 36, when we came out for the boycott, they had come from the, that is the leaders had come from the sellout in Cape Town. And they reported there, and then they came up with the idea, let's give it a trial, and this is, you know, half a loaf is better than no bread at all, that kind of thing. And we were defeated on the question of the boycott at that time. Now, what happened just that year, after the convention, I don't know. I can't remember.
Yes, be that as it may, there is a statement where she says that the All African Convention put up candidates. The All African Convention did not put up candidates.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That though we were defeated, we did not put up candidates. We had a treasurer called Dr. Morocco. If you read this, Dr. Morocco was the treasurer of the All African Convention. He had never been an ANC man. You see, he was an All African Convention treasurer from the start. Now, about, I think it was 1937, when suddenly what happened is that the ANC could not find a president.
That was after Nkrumah.
That when Nkrumah went to Europe and left them without a president. So what did they do? They looked for somebody with a title. And who could be better but Morocco, who is a landowner? What was that area called?
Yeah,
it was a kind of an independent area, you know, near in Bloemfontein, in Orange Free State. Now, this fellow Morocco, they occupied a certain position in the Orange Free State, in that area. And Morocco entered politics when he became treasurer of the All African Convention. He was a sort of an enlightened fellow. Then when the ANC found that they did not have a president after Nkrumah went to Europe, they looked out for a candidate and they picked on Morocco. And they said to Morocco, look, you be the president of the ANC. Morocco said, but I am not a member of the ANC. So the one fellow, I don't know who it was, said, this is your subscription. And he took the money out of his pocket and he paid the subscription. And somebody wrote a note, he said, now I propose your name as president. And Morocco, flattered by this ANC, he was made president. And soon after, Morocco, he did not resign from the treasurership. See, we did not know about this.
We didn't know.
Yes. And then he entered, of course, this question of the elections. Because by then, we were still fighting for the boycott of the elections. He had resumed the struggle, the boycott of the election. So Morocco here stood for the elections.
Was Morocco part of the...
Yes, Morocco stood for the elections. And that we knew. You see here, page 152, here she says, the All African Convention had also put up certain candidates at this election, all of whom were apparently defeated. We had never put up anybody. Dr. Morocco, who won a seat in 1942 and was the AAC's treasurer, was not, it would seem, put forward by the AAC as one of their official candidates. We never put him forward. He did it behind the backs of the organization. We were ignorant of him. And he was not a member of the ANC. And as I told you, they paid the subscription. And Morocco, up till the end of these days, laughed. He said, you know, it was a very funny thing that I was never a member of the ANC, became an instant member because they paid my subscription.
And now,
here's another prejudiced remark.
That sounds funny to anybody who doesn't.
Yeah,
how a man can be a president of an organization he didn't join.
Yes.
You see what I mean?
But it was the kind of thing that the ANC would do because it wanted prestigious candidates, no, you
I
see?
I understand that fully. Yeah. It doesn't sound funny to me at all.
It doesn't funny?
No. They always wanted
Let me just say,
you're interrupting me. I want to finish this.
All right, darling. I'm just becoming this business of Morocco. How you come to know about it. Now, a president.
Treasurer.
So, we visit Morocco in Tabanchu.
That's right, that was the area.
And then this one says, what kind of a man are you? You were a treasurer, so now suddenly you are... How can you go from the convention
to
the ANC? And he says, I was never a member of the ANC. What do you mean you never a member? You're a president. He says, I never joined there. And that's what he explained.
You're putting in a detail.
It's straight from his own mouth.
From his own mouth, because he was surprised at this business.
Now here's another point here. Joe Matthews. Now you know who Joe Matthews was. Joe Matthews was a leading member of the Communist Party. In fact, he had gone to the Soviet Union and had got accolades from the Soviet Union and so on.
And China.
Now he was the son of Professor Zachariah Z.K. Matthews, the first